That I did say. I mean, you have basically, you can have a non-conserved energy momentum tensor. Yeah, right. But since, so the principle that's being used is general covariance. I want the energy momentum tensor, however I renormalize it, to be conserved. That's the principle of equivalence, to give you coordinate invariance. So there's nothing sacred about conformal invariance, but general coordinate invariance. but that is the analogous choice we face. I mean, the electric current is, of course, coupled to a gauge field, and therefore, for all kinds of reasons, you want that to be conserved. All right, so I don't know if I should write this down or not. It probably won't help to write it down, so let me not. Okay. So what comes out of this? Well, what we did was take that effective action, which at least in this conformal frame, I won't worry about the coefficients and get the details, right? And basically, again, this operator, which I erased, plus something which is linear in sigma, And what we did was study this action in and of itself. So in the 2D situation, that's what people did first, because to couple it to the cosmological term is very complicated. So they first studied the free action and then added the cosmological term, the so-called marginal deformations. So the way to think about what you're doing here is this is a Gaussian action. It has some very unfamiliar kinetic term, but it's otherwise just a free action for this field sigma. And so if you quantize it, you're basically studying free field theory around this, with this action. And then if you add the Einstein term, or cosmological terms, the ordinary terms you know about, then basically, if these terms are treated as perturbations on this action, that's a completely a strong coupling phase of gravity in which the conformal fluctuations, this action is dominating those, and these are added, if you wish, as perturbations. What's the I'm not sure I understand what you mean. I mean, if you scale everything, then these terms all behave. They're all relevant in the infrared, strictly speaking. This is what I claim is the low energy effective action for gravity. The usual classical terms plus this Vesemino term.
What the traditional
Yeah, this is not R squared, right? This is different. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it depends which background you expand around, but yes, the delta 4, if you want to see the analogy, basically this thing, Green's function, is a logarithm in two dimensions, right? And this thing, because of its scale invariance, is a logarithm in four dimensional platform. So it never falls off. That's one way to see it. But what I'm saying now is, you know, something that just turns on its head what you usually you work in a semi-classical limit, right? Where you say these terms, like, you know, the gravity in this room or the solar system or the Robertson-Walker universe is governed by these terms, right? And you say the fluctuations around that background are small, at least you hope they're small, okay? Whereas in conformal field theory, what you do is say, this term is the dominant term, and these are perturbations. So that, of course, is not the universe we're living in right here in this room, but it does describe a formal fixed point of gravity in four dimensions. So you can then basically treat these operators as marginal deformations of that conformal fixed point and ask, with this propagator, how do they flow? Calculate the anomalous dimensions. Putting it all together and solving it is a much harder problem. What I'm telling you, just historically, what we did was study this conformal fixed point and using these terms as marginal deformations, analogous to what you do in 2D. Okay. So when you do that, this is the main thing I need to tell you, because that's what we're going to use for the CMB, is that these operators, which naively, classically, have certain dimensions, two here, right, because it's in four dimensions, the integral's four dimensions, and this R has two derivatives, so this thing has dimension two, and this thing has dimension four, or codimension zero. Okay, so these things scale, if you put in the sigma dependence, they scale like e to the four sigma, and this one scales like e to the two sigma. So this is the statement that these two things have classical scale dimensions, which make them relevant operators in the RG sense at large distances. They have certain classical scaling dimensions, but if you take into account this term, then you can calculate the anomalous dimensions of these operators, and that's what, yeah. Yeah. Yes, go ahead. Look, you're asking for the universe yet. I'm just doing a calculation saying that if I have a conformal fixed point, I can calculate the anomalous dimensions of these operators. I haven't said that this is the universe yet. Okay. I'm saying that this term is there, so there is a conformal fixed point in 4D gravity. Now, where that is in the universe is what we're going to discuss. You know, we have to get to if we're going to talk about any observational consequence. It's nothing to do with being dominated by massless fields. I mean, this term is there because there are some massless fields, including gravitons. So the coefficient is non-zero. That's all you have to buy. I'm not saying that the energy density is dominated by massless fields. That's not the statement. You can write down the classical equations that come from this action, sure. Yeah, you can do that. Well, if you're not conformally flat, it's non-local energy momentum tensor. It hasn't been solved. You're welcome to look at it. Well, that is the approximation of conformal field theory, in which you say that this term is dominating, and then you say, suppose it were dominating. What happens when I put these? What happens when I perturb the fixed point by these non-conformal terms? Is the fixed point stable or not? Okay. That. So I'm not saying this is still not saying this has anything to do with the universe. No. I mean, it's... This? Right. Well, the statement is that this is not a UV fixed point, but an infrared fixed point. Because the anomaly has to do with massless fields which never decouple. So the fluctuations in the metric, in the conformal part of the metric, are governed by large-scale effects. But, okay, you can't see yet whether it's UV or IR from just this discussion. But let me just tell you what the anomalous dimensions are, because that's interesting. So you get, the amazing thing is that you can do this calculation, and basically everything is determined by this one coefficient, which is related to what I called B prime before. This one coefficient of the anomaly. And you get a simple quadratic equation by doing a one-loop diagram with this sigma propagator there. Yeah. Well, okay, I mean, this is a conformal fixed point, so UV and ultraviolet, I mean, UV and infrared are a bit confusing. I mean, because, you know, this is a Gaussian fixed point, which is conformal invariant. So all scales are the same, and now I perturb it. Yeah. So these are the analogs of the KPZ exponents, people who know what that means, in two dimensions. So you can calculate the anomalous dimensions of these couplings around this conformal fixed point. So the statement is basically that you get additional corrections because Q squared is appearing upstairs. When you do the propagator, it's downstairs. So 1 over Q squared is like a coupling constant of this action. And you get some simple quadratic relations for these anomalous dimensions, which tell you that this fixed point is stable with only some non-trivial scaling. So that's the basic output of this theory, which we then wanted to use in some way for observation. But you should ask more questions here if you want. Graviton, there's no graviton here. The graviton is in the perturbation. If you expand around where? Around flat space. But this is not flat space. This is big fluctuations of the conformal fact. It's random geometry in a sense. So it's not sensible to talk about, you know, just a flat space expansion. So, I mean, the way I interpret it is that there's a completely unusual, right? It's not gravity as we know it, but a completely unusual conformal fixed point in four dimensions where things scale in this way, and that is nothing like the flat space or Einstein phase that we're familiar with in semi-classical calculation. And yeah, okay, so. Yeah, that the relevant part of the fluctuations are in this conformal factor. That if you put in gravitons, that basically that's just one more massless field which can couple to this trace anomaly. But it doesn't particularly make sense to talk about the perturbative propagator around flat space, because this fixed point is nothing like flat space. Well, it's not, that's, as I said, we're certainly not living at that conformal fixed point here, right? So, I mean, we did, you know, the story is we followed our nose and did the calculations to see what we could get, and then started to think about how this might actually be relevant for cosmology, for the universe. Well, if the fixed point is basically imprinted on the microwave background or something far outside the horizon. That's the next thing I'm going to ask you to accept, to assume. I'm sorry, you want to add what? Any G bar, yeah. Yeah. Right. Sure. sure. Oh, well, this is box squared. But I don't understand that question. I mean, what do you want to do? You want to expand your usual Einstein action around flat? Okay, but then if you treat those terms, those propagator terms, as relevant, as the same order as this, then of course the expansion around flat space, these terms will dominate, as usual. Right? If you expand around flat space, then these terms will be the dominant ones. So this can only make sense if there is a scaling in which these couplings go to zero, and you have a conformal phase, which is where this term is basically a very small deformation of the conformal fixed point. So you should not expand around that at the conformal fixed point. Yeah, depend on Q squared. They go. Q squared goes to infinity. You recover the classical dimension. I mean, no, it could be 10, 100, something like that. These are deformations. These are marginal deformations. Right. I don't think so. I mean, these are the natural ones to look at, right? Because they are, yeah, right. Okay. I mean, we looked at basically r squared, r and lambda, and they're all marginal. If you put a coupling here of r squared, then basically you find that's why I call it infrared fixed point, because if you calculate the beta function of this coupling, you find that it has basically the same sign as lambda by fourth here. So it flows to zero at large distance. Now you're welcome to think of other things. I certainly haven't proven exhaustive list. But the natural local deformations do either float to zero or just characterized by anomalous dimensions. No? Yeah, I mean, I haven't. Not here, no. Maybe the earlier. I mean, this. No, I didn't. I mean, you're insisting on having a space-time picture when this happened here and then, and you know, and there and now. I haven't told you where this is, right? In order to even answer that question, I have to have some complete history, right, with a metric and the evolution equations. I'm not doing that. I'm just, for the moment, just discussing, you know, in the abstract, if you wish, where this the properties of this fixed point. The very next step is, I'm going to, if there is this fixed point, and if it played any role at any time in the universe, the assumption is, in order to make contact with observations, is that these scaling dimensions are important or relevant for whatever radiation is coming at us from the horizon. Okay, so this fixed point, if you wish, is out there somewhere, very far out of the horizon, where I don't. I don't explore it except for its imprint on the microwave background. So I don't know if it would happened in the early universe. You know, if I had an inflationary epoch where these things were created and then went out of the horizon and then came back. I don't know. I'm just saying if this really applies in the extreme infrared, then I can use it to calculate corrections to the Harrison's ultraviolet spectrum. That's what I want to do next. But so this is the background. So it is, you know, similar, not, you know, I think this is infrared physics, not Trans-Planckian physics, but it has some similar flavor to what you were talking about yesterday, right? In that you had explicit de Sitter space where there were very small, very short wavelength effects, which are then being redshifted out, and then you want to ask when they come back now in the horizon what effect they have. So I don't have that space-time picture necessarily. I'm just saying whatever happened in the early universe and whatever the UV physics really is, if there is this infrared fixed point, maybe it's relevant to looking at long-distance fluctuations of the microwave background. So now the thing we did in that paper was basically just, well, I should say one more thing about this, is that these scaling exponents mean that if you look at the correlation function of something like the curvature tensor, of course, I mean the Ricci scalar, of course you should really replace this by some operator with the correct scaling dimension. Formal field theory, but the point is that classically, this of course goes to a constant, right? Because r is equal to 4 lambda in the classical equation. So this goes to 16 lambda squared at large distances, right? Just trivially. Whereas here, in this conformal fixed point, this falls with some power that's calculable in terms of the conformal weights of this operator. So this suggests a very different picture at the conformal fixed point. There's no fixed metric, there's no cosmological term. Instead, you have these fluctuations which are basically suppressing the vacuum energy, and the effective cosmological constant, say as measured by the long distance correlations of R, are going to zero. So this was the original idea, that this should have something to do with the screening of the cosmological constant due to these quantum effects. This is operator. Oh, this is this is the classic. This is the operator which becomes the classical Einstein. Yes. No, not connected. This is just any. Of course, in the conformal field theory, it's only connected. I'm just saying trivially that if classical equations were holding r equals 4 lambda, then this would go to a constant. But, of course, at a conformal fixed point, it doesn't. If there is this, or if these fluctuations are playing a role at very large distances, they could be responsible for effectively screening the cosmological constant. Lambda. I think so. Those were just. Well, I haven't tried that. But you want to look at this? I mean, these should be infrared relevant, irrelevant operators. You can try it. I haven't done it. So, I mean, a different way to interpret these anomalous dimensions is that this is any. I can tell you what delta is. Any scaling, any conformal scaling, whatever the anomalous dimension is. this thing will go to zero, unlike this. So I don't need Q squared to be larger. Right. This is of course a completely different calculation. So another way to say this is if you write an RG equation for the lambda in terms of the Newton constant, when you plug in these anomalous dimensions, you find that this thing has a flow, which even if you add other terms, so this mu is the mass scale. So even if you add other terms here, which are the classical terms, if p is greater than zero, in fact it is, p is equal to this combination of exponents, then the solution of this RG equation is see, if p is greater than 0, this term always dominates over, as long as it's not bigger than 1 or 2, this term always dominates and it goes to 0 as mu goes to, or mu, think of mu as 1 over a length scale. So as L goes to infinity or mu goes to 0, this term always dominates, and basically here's one way of seeing how it might be possible for the classical Einstein and cosmological term to flow to zero more rapidly than the term that's governing governed by the anomaly. So, of course, if I put p to zero, if there's no RG flow here, then I will just recover the ordinary cosmological constant problem, that this thing will go to a constant at large mu. At small mu. But as long as p is greater than 0, this always flows to 0. So there is, the physics here, I think, is very interesting. That was the reason we actually tried to study this first, was to understand how you could actually get a screening effect for the cosmological term. All right. So I agree that this is not, you know, not a complete model, not a complete dynamics, I have the Lagrangian, but there's, you know, a lot more to do to solve the equation and find realistic cosmologies. But I think this does give a clue of what could be the mechanism for a smaller cosmological term. So now we just went ahead and looked at these correlation points. Basically, if you go through the ordinary Harrison-Zeldovich argument, then you can see it actually corresponds to this for the case in which delta, in which you basically replace this by the Ricci scalar. So the usual argument is that in the Einstein equations, the energy momentum tensor is related to the curvature. So if you want to look at the fluctuations in the energy momentum tensor, you look at basically the scaling dimensions of the curvature, which is 2 classically. So delta equals 2 classically. Right. I'm just counting derivatives here. This is the Einstein, of course, this is the Einstein tensor. So I'm just saying you can reformulate the Harrison-Zeldovich calculation this way, and think of doing this in momentum space, flat space. So minus 2 delta becomes 2 delta in Fourier space, and the minus 3 just comes from Fourier transforming three dimensions. So you see, at the spectral index, n is 2 delta minus 3. And classically, delta is 2 because you have basically two derivatives in the classical Einstein equation, and so that's what gives you the 1 of the classical Harrison-Zeldovich scale invariant spectrum. So what we're saying now is that suppose you have this fixed point at super horizon scales, then there would not only be scale invariance but full conformal invariance, and the classical scale dimensions could be modified by the anomalous dimensions of this conformal fixed point. So basically what we did was just take at face value those anomalous dimensions, plug them in here, and calculate a new delta, which is corrected by these quantum effects at the fixed point, and just ask, is that possible to be observationally detected? So in the calculation where you replace this by the fluctuations of the relevant of the appropriate operators at the fixed point, this is controlled by these anomalous dimensions. So remember, beta 2 went to 2, beta 0 went to 4 at the limit of large Q squared. So this goes back at large Q squared to the classical Harrison-Zeldovich spectrum. But if Q squared is not infinite, this is some function of Q squared, which you can write down. It's not that. Here's a slide. Maybe I should show the. Basically, as a function of Q squared, it looks like this. Q squared was, roughly speaking, that number of fields in that anomaly coefficient. So basically get asymptote to 1 at large Q squared, and it grows and grows rapidly as Q squared approaches, because of the way of normalized things. There's a special value, a critical value at 8, where this grows very large, grows infinite. So if you say that you know that the spectral index is within 10% or something of 1, then you can put a bound on Q squared and say something about what the number of massless fields are if you take this model seriously. However, I think this is just an interesting way of parameterizing the violations of classical scale invariance by some anomalous dimension. You can think of Q squared as just some parameter which is characterizing the fixed point, and then you can calculate both the No. Q squared is dimensionless. There's no new dimensional parameter. These are all dimensionless, anomalous dimensions. Okay. This is k over some scale, any scale. The logarithms here. So you have to put some argument in the logarithm. It's dk over some for some new power, right? So yes, you can put a k0 over k if you want there. This is completely arbitrary. This is a logarithm. K0 is not determined by conformal invariance. That's like asking what the RG scale is. If I have a power law, right? I have a power law. This spectral index is a power law. So if you put in the right dimensions, if you put in the constant here, then the constant certainly has some dimensions, yes.
Where?
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that it could vary in principle because, what's massless depends on what scale you're looking at. So there could be a flow in which Q squared changes with time. Yeah, now what I'm saying. Right. 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 Yeah, so the big assumption here, in order to connect it with cosmology, is that this conformal fixed point, these fluctuations with those powers, is actually taking place very far outside the horizon. Density perturbation. No, that's a good question. Yeah. I have to think about what the right operator. This is a very naive argument, which I just looked at basically scalars. Conformal field theory, there aren't too many operators you can write down that have good properties. So if you just look at the scalar part, then you get this anomalous dimension delta. So you're asking basically how do gravitons couple here? How do I look at the spin two fluctuation? Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. That should be looked at. Also, I'm not sure, to be honest here, that it makes sense to take this conformal behavior and then do everything completely classically from there. I mean, so what I've done is assume there's some spectrum imprinted on the super horizon modes, and then propagated them inward, essentially classically, the usual taxable. So then the only effect is this anomalous dimension. If there's actually deformation of geometry going on, deformation away from the Einstein equations going on near the horizon, then I don't know, this calculation could be questioned. Not the right. It's the simplest thing to do, that's all. Probably. Yeah. Although the picture doesn't make sense. I mean this was a few years ago, so it was still pretty naive, but what I was thinking is that there has to be some kind of turnover, right, where you go from the classical equation to this fixed point behavior. And that's the interesting question: how do you get there? So you see, what's easy to do is to calculate at the fixed point, but that's hard to connect to our semi-classical world. So this is an attempt to say, well, maybe these things just come in and propagate classically. But I don't know that that's right. Maybe that's... So you should think of it now as a kind of model, phenomenology, which does show you that you could get... And I think that's a very generic, probably robust feature, that if you have scale invariance, you should normally expect it in gravity, where you have also coordinate invariance, to be connected with full conformal invariance. If you have full conformal invariance, there's no reason generically to expect classical scale dimensions. So you should think in terms of some deviations from the classical behavior, and that those deviations, if they're ever observed, will tell you something very interesting about what's generating those fluctuations. But there's no reason for them to have exactly the classical scale dimension. And Harrison-Zeldovich is just classical scale dimension. What? This gives you a number. Depends how you interpret the data. We have some experts here, but this gives you a number for Q squared, which is greater than about 50. And if you look at how the counting goes, Q squared is dominated by the highest spin states. So if you just looked at the anomaly coefficient for massless free fields, then in fact the scalars make almost no contribution to this normalization. The fermions, a little bit more, vectors, a little bit more, and the biggest contribution is from the gravitons themselves, which actually hasn't been calculated. This is 62. So 62 of one, so it's one third roughly. Each vector contributes one third. So that's a lot of vectors to get up to above 50. But the gravitational part is probably by itself of order 8 or 10. That's a more difficult calculation to do. And by the way, one way, the suggestion made a few years ago is to try to do lattice simulations in 4D and see if one can ever see these fixed point behavior and the scaling relations that are predicted in the continuum. That's a difficult thing. It hasn't been done yet, but if one would ever have lattice data that would random lattices that would show the scaling behavior, then you would have at least some control over this fixed point. You'd understand it a lot better. So, yeah, Q squared is positive. And I'm assuming here Q squared is positive because it is for all the known fields, although there's no general proof. Could be negative. I don't think so. That's 4 minus 4. No, it's 4 minus 4 beta 2 over beta 0. Classically, beta 2 goes to 2, and beta 0 goes to 4. So delta is greater than 2. Goes the other way. You have to look at how beta 2 and beta 0 depend on Q. This is greater than or equal to 2. I have the expression here. But if Q squared is positive, delta is greater than or equal to 2. It's blue. Right. As I understand, that's harder to get in inflationary models. Can do it, but it's not. It's the simplest models either give you simple Harrison-Zeldovich or slightly red spectrum. If you know that. I mean, you can get it. You can cook up additional field models. So, in fact, yeah, we made that observation a few years ago. That might be. So this is an interesting way to parameterize any deviations. Think of it that way. If you're just looking at the data. This is an interesting way to parameterize possible deviations, and it tells you something about possible anomalous dimensions away from the fixed point. So the last thing is, before we quit for lunch, or we're already over lunch, is that if you not only, so this is the spectrum, spectral index, and is generically greater than equal to 1 if Q squared is positive. The other thing you can say is if you have a conformal fixed point, you don't expect only purely Gaussian fluctuations. So this is the spectral index in two-point functions, but you can consider higher point functions. And the form of those functions, although not the coefficient, the form is dictated by conformal invariants. So, this is familiar from theories of turbulence and other situations in which conformal invariance is realized, you don't expect that the statistics to be purely Gaussian. You should expect, for example, at some level, there to be temperature fluctuations with correlations like this. And you can, from this conformal fixed point behavior, actually determine the form of the function of these three angles. You take three different angles on the sky and average over the sky. This non-Gaussian statistic should be non-zero. Yeah, that's a good question. Now, I think just naively, by the way, that if you have, you would expect naively that if you have the two-point function characterized by some small number, which is 10 to the minus 5, naively you would expect this to be 10 to the minus 5, some power like 3/2. So it could be quite small. It's a good question, though. We should be able to calculate the coefficient in terms of this sigma fluctuation. So I'm going to try to do that. It hasn't been done yet. I expect it's going to be small, probably quite small. It's going to get better, but it's, I mean, you have to push it quite hard, right? This is what the bounds now are. What, on the order of 10%, 5%, down from 1%. So if this number turns, well, okay, it's getting close. It's getting interesting. So again, I don't know what you would say about inflation. In inflationary models, you could probably work hard and get non-Gaussian statistics. But typically, in the simplest models, you don't. By another factor. So yeah, we should try to pin this down in magnitude also, because that would be interesting. Well, because we have only one parameter, we have this comes with some coefficient that's determined, but well, if you have this effective action at this conformal fixed point, and it's Gaussian. So, which operators? Yes. Yes. That's true. So I haven't thought about that too hard yet. It's you can only say naively. You can only say about the form, not the magnitude. But you think it's out of control completely? Even if you have a Gaussian fixed point. What operators would you have to supply? We can talk about this. So that's basically the story. So we are, I think, have some mechanism here for possibly understanding a cosmological constant at very large distances. And there are some intriguing aspects and possibly testable aspects in the microwave background in both the spectrum and statistics. And what remains is to put this all together into some, you know, not yet a model in which you have all the observables calculable, in which you have a space-time history. That's what you would want, right? Is to have a full understanding of what the metric is, what's going on, where are the fluctuations that are giving rise to this, what's going on outside the horizon. So, you know, that full picture has yet to be completely worked out. I just wanted to throw this out here.